Are the younger generations in your family interested in your family heirlooms? Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. I've got some antique duck decoys and a few some prints and a few things that I think kids might be interested in, but I'm not positive. We're going to be talking about antiques and collectibles today and address that issue and a whole lot more with Shirley Bowman. She's a certified personal property appraiser, registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She's also owns Bowman Auction Services, and she owns Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. And Shirley, always great. Thanks for coming by again.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And I've got a few things that maybe the kids would like, the younger generation, but have you learned anything about getting the younger generation interested in those kinds of things?
Well, I have learned something. And if listeners have heard me before, I think they've heard me say, like, how many families have said to me, my kids don't want my wedding china, and they feel so bad about it. Well, I just came back from the annual meeting of the International Society of Appraisers, and one of our speakers, who's a very successful auctioneer, Andrew Brunk, and an appraiser, of course, said to us, the days are over when we just keep passing things down the line. And that was nothing new. But what was new from him is the way to get them interested is to use an antique in an unexpected way. You know, a lot of the young people want to be free to travel. Maybe they have a chance to go and work abroad for 6 months or a year, and they don't want to have to deal with all this china packing and moving and storing and all the rest of it. So the way to do this is to use these things unexpected ways. If they've got a very modern house, maybe one spectacular antique piece of furniture will really set it off. And he showed us a lot of pictures from interior decorating magazines that show just that.
Mm-hmm.
That one surprising piece in there, or the Victorian painting in the middle of this modern room, or the modern house with the antique doorknobs. Just a little twists like that. Or here's one that if you follow the internet and Facebook, you might have seen the pictures of how people are reusing pianos.
I didn't see that.
The old upright pianos, they take out the piano works and make them into either a desk or a bar. You know, the glassware hanging from the top, where the keys are, that's made into the desk surface or the working surface, and then putting, you know, bottle rails underneath. Well, if nobody plays piano in the house, they don't want the piano. But if they can use it for something else, they can still say when they have guests, that was my grandma's piano, even though it's no longer a piano. It's something they might use right now. So that upcycling, changing the use of something, is very popular right now. And I know maybe it's hard to think of your grandma's china being used as a bird feeder in the garden. But again, if they're, you know, entertaining on the patio, they might say, see my bird feeder, that was my grandma's china. At least they've got a little connection to the past.
Well, that's a great idea, I think. And there is a show, a television show where these folks, the guys go out and they take apart old buildings, the pieces out of old buildings and so forth. What's the name of it? I can't think of it right now.
It might be Salvage Dogs.
Salvage Dogs, that's the one. And then they're often repurposing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're repurposing that piano or whatever it might
be,
making
taking
lamps.
Architectural pieces and making them the basis for a table.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
And so maybe people are just sort of, the Salvage Dogs, maybe people are sort of getting inspired from watching shows like that.
Yes, and there are that. And you can look, a lot of ideas are available on the internet. So if you have a piece and you want some ideas, look up repurposing whatever it is you have.
Pinterest.
A baby cradle, something, who knows.
Pinterest would be a good spot to go for that as well. Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. All right, some good ideas, and you may have some ideas as well, or you may just have some questions about something that you have that you'd like to know a little more about and possibly it's worth. Call in 1-800-642-1234. can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Kim and Eau Claire up first. Kim, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for the show today. I've got my great-grandfather's discharge from the Civil War from 1866. He was discharged in Fort Leavenworth. And I actually also got out to Washington, D.C. many years ago and got into the archives and got all the other actual real documents, the original sign-in papers and all those. It was really neat. But I was wondering what the value might be of his discharge paper.
Sure. First of all, I think I would like to say that it's kind of priceless as a family heirloom. Knowing, you know, where your ancestor was and what part they played in history is really special. So I'm glad you're looking at those things and following through on that. A lot of families actually did keep discharge papers. If you have a bigger archive with the muster roll or whatever else you might have collected, that adds to it. But a lot of times the Civil War discharge papers aren't worth a whole lot to other people other than the families, unless they were a famous general or something in the war. So, you know, it might be between $50 and $100 if someone is a real Civil War collector and they just want to get all those papers from that period. Mm-hmm. That's about what I see them going for at auction.
All right.
It'll be passed down to family.
Great. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that.
And there are other places, too. If you were going to donate, would you go for something like that? Was Veterans Museum?
Veterans Museum's one place, and the State Historical Society.
Yeah.
Here in Wisconsin, you know, they have a big collection of people from Wisconsin who are in the Civil War and keep those papers. So that's another thing. If, for some reason, the family says, I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good place to go to keep them.
Yeah, forever. Yeah. Judy, thanks again, Kim. Judy in Lodi, it's your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Larry and your guest. I've got an octagon table that's been in our family for five generations. It was made by Johnson & Johnson in Michigan. I've got a little metal tab that was a copper tab that was underneath the table. It stands about 4.5 feet high. It's got 4, 5, 6 legs, and it's all hand. It looks like it's almost handmade because it's so beautiful. It's got the old screws in there, and I've looked everywhere on this table. My daughter went on her computer. We went through every book in the library and could not find anything on it. It's got inlaid wood on top, all different variations of wood.
Boy, mm-hmm. Sounds
like
pretty.
Paste in there.
Yeah, is this a dining table or more of a occasional side table?
No, it wouldn't be a side table. I don't know what. I think it was just used to put something on top, you know, not heavy or what, or
sure, a display or something
or anything, you know. No.
Okay. Well, you know, it could very well have been handmade. We do see that, and I've got something I'm working on right now with for a family, and they had articles about it took Granddad, 3 years to finish this table, and there was an article in the local small-town newspaper that they had about it. So very well could be. But you said that it has the tag on from Michigan.
Yeah.
And that doesn't surprise me a lot. Five generations is approximately 100 or so years ago. They talk about a generation being about 20 to 25 years.
Yeah, so, and it has the name Johnson & Johnson on that tab.
Yeah. Well, Michigan and the upper Midwest in general, but Michigan in particular, was a real center for furniture making during that period, 100, 150 years ago. And so there are a lot of pieces that I see when I go out that might be just stamped Michigan or Grand Rapids, Michigan, or as yours, a company in Michigan. And those companies may not have lasted long. And so that might be why you can't find anything. They may have been in business in a small home workshop, basically, for a few years, or they could have been a little bit bigger than that and been bought out by somebody fairly quickly. So that's why you can't find anything on the company. The table itself, I can't really give you a value. A lot of it is in the aesthetic, and of course, I'm not seeing your table.
Yeah.
But that's why you can't find the information on it, because of those companies being bought up rapidly and going in and out of business during the real heyday of furniture production in Michigan.
Would the Michigan Historical Society possibly have something?
They may. That may be a good place to look. Give them a call and see if they're look on their website first, and otherwise give their reference people a call and see if they can tell you anything about that company.
Yeah, I like
that.
Have
to do it through Michigan, though, historical?
Yeah, Michigan Historical Society. If you put that into the computer, you know it's going to pop up, and you're going to be able to get a phone number. I'd just probably call them. Yeah, and maybe have a photo ready to send as
to
well.
To send that you could show them. And when you're taking that photo, also take a photo of that tag you're talking about so that they can see the company name.
Yeah. Good luck, Judy. Thanks a lot for calling. And speaking of photos, you may have a photo of an item that you want Shirley to take a look at, and you can post that up on our Facebook page, as a matter of fact. Our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. So type The Larry Mueller Show in to Facebook, and that's where you'll wind up at our place, and you can post your photo and question right there. Of course, you can also email us at talk@WPR.org or go ahead and call 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 1 o'clock today on the Kathleen Dunn Show, they'll be looking at why more teens are using e-cigarettes and how online advertising might be playing a part in that. So that's at one. Right now, though, taking a look at heirlooms and antiques with Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser, registered auctioneer, owner of Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. And we have, I believe we have links up on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show to that. And if you, again, a photo posted on The Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, we'll take a look at it. Robert in Bayview up next with a question. Hi, Robert.
Hi. I'd just like to share what I did with our heirlooms. I'm in my 60s, and I had original Hot Wheels cars, but I have two daughters. They weren't interested in them. A little fishing line and ornament hooks, and they made great Christmas tree ornaments. Then my sister followed this idea with her Barbie clothes and Barbie furniture, and her daughters now have all of it for their Barbie Christmas tree. Great idea, beautiful topic.
Oh,
what a nice idea.
That's a great idea, Robert. Thank you so much. And, of course, you can think about that. That could be applied to a lot of different...
It sure could if they're small enough to hang on the tree, you know, and a lot of people put more than one Christmas tree up. Mm-hmm. So you might have a theme here and a theme in another room, a different theme. So that's a great...
I love that idea. Yeah. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Peter in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm just calling in to talk about how you mentioned getting young people interested in antiques and heirlooms. And I'm 23, and actually my dad's... interest in early American furniture and refinishing it kind of became a bond for us. And the result of this is I'm now going to get my graduate degree in American material culture. So just for me, at least, the way to get, you know, your children interested is to get them interested in history, to get them to appreciate the past. And this could be for your own family heirlooms or for antiques in general.
That's wonderful, and congratulations on your work. And pretty cool idea, isn't it, Shirley?
It's a fabulous idea. I really love hearing that. And just a note for the listeners, he's going to get a degree, basically an art historian, and there are jobs you can get in that area. A lot of people, and I didn't know for a long time, some of them, if you're going to want to be, oh, let's say a museum curator, you probably need to go through and get a PhD. But if you want to do some other careers, like, you know, appraising, you don't need to go that far with your education. And there's a lot that you can do with the programs through organizations like I was talking about before, International Society of Appraisers. So there are careers in that field. And sometimes I think our school systems and such forget to tell students about that.
Yeah, very, very good. Thanks, Peter.
All right.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Very cool. You may have a way to get your youngsters interested in heirlooms. Love to hear about that as well. But Judy in Ripon has a question about some silverware, I think. Hi, Judy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I love the vintage silverware and just the silverware that people used to use on their tables for holiday meals. And so every time I'm at an estate sale, I can't help myself, but if they have a chest of silver, I always buy it. It's always very reasonably priced. And I don't use it for garden decor. It would break my heart to see my kids hanging it out on a bird feeder or something like that. But I have my mother's, which my sister was not interested in at all because she said it needed to be cleaned. And I think that that's the main problem with the silver settings for the table is that they tarnish and then you have to clean them. And that's why people aren't interested in them. However, I can't, like I said, I can't keep my hands off of them. And I have like 10 sets. But it's kind of overkill. But I was wondering if your guests could elaborate on the difference between when somebody says a set of silver or a set of silver plate, is there a big difference or is it a question of semantics? And then in response to one of the other callers that called about the Matchbox cars, our house was on a tour of homes and I actually made a big, thick, full garland that hung on our mantle one time with antique teacups and silver that I hung from the garland. So, anyway.
Very good.
But yes, I would love to hear the difference between silver and silver plate, if there is such a thing.
Okay, thanks, and what a great idea. Thanks, Judy. Well, what about silver versus silver plate?
Yes, there is a difference. It isn't just semantics. Silver plate is when the flatware or the hollowware, such as cream and sugar or coffee pot, is made of metal alloy, and then it is plated or coated with silver. So it's not silver all the way through. It's coated with silver. And it might be coated several times. You know, sometimes you'll see on the bottom EPNS. That means electroplated nickel silver. Or it might say quad plate. That means they put the plating on four times over. So they were trying to have an edge over somebody who only did it three times.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what that would mean. Sterling silver in the United States must be 92.5% silver, pure silver, to be called sterling silver. So it's the percentage then of the silver. The reason that people still go for sterling silver is that it has an intrinsic value as a precious metal. Both silver, sterling and silver plate needs to be polished. And a lot of people don't go for the silver plate because you still have the work, but you don't have the intrinsic value of the silver. Now, in other countries, there's different percentages of silver. German silver might be 80% silver, if you hear that term. So we're talking here mostly about what we're doing in the United States, but just be aware that other countries do have different standards. But that's the difference.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Chris in Burlington. You're up.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call. I have an old antique couch that used to be my grandparents, and it has this long cushion that's stuffed with feathers, with goose feathers, and I've been emotionally attached to it for so long, but now I think I've come to terms with either getting rid of it, I don't know if somebody would want it, or perhaps, like you said, maybe making something else out of it. I was wondering if perhaps you had any ideas.
Oh, my. Nothing's coming to...
Coach.
Boy. It depends on how your house is set up. If you have an entryway or something, using it either front or back to build, have someone build it into like a mudroom space for where you can take off your boots and hang your coats and that kind of thing, just so you can kind of, you know, have that built into it. So it kind of saves the integrity of the piece. And maybe the listeners can come up with something. Just in this short time here, we've heard a lot of ideas from listeners of what they've done with some of their things.
You know, and I know, ideas. Yeah, I know there were on the salvage. Go back to the salvage dogs for a minute. I know on the salvage dogs program, they've done things with couches, and mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. I can't remember a thing, but you might just go onto their website and take a look at what they've got.
Their website, and if I know they're on Netflix, and it's Salvage Dogs, DAWGS.
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
And they might have ideas. Otherwise, just Google upscale couches, antique couch, and see what you get.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot for calling. There's got to be uses.
Oh, I'm sure. I've seen old bathtubs turned into couches.
Yeah.
So there's got to be something. I don't think you turn the couch into a bathtub, though.
No, I don't think it works the other way. Kira in Madison, your turn. Talking today with Shirley Bauman, by the way, of Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. Now we'll go to Kira. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just had a question. I'm looking for some information about Thai temple paintings. I was gifted these temple paintings by a friend of ours who is Thai. She told me they're about 100 years old, and I've always wanted to learn a little bit more about them. She wasn't too sure about the origins of them. The story that came with them was she believed they were taken down and sold somewhat illegally. She gifted them to originally to my mom and I, because she wanted us to restore them. I've always wanted to learn more about them, but I've never known where to go, if there's a place that specializes in, like, Asian art and things like that. So I didn't know if your guests had any information about that.
All right. What do you think, Shirley?
Well, it sounds very interesting. That part where you said they might have been sold illegally made me wonder if repatriation wasn't something that might be appropriate here.
I had no idea where they were from, and like she said, she believes they were temple paintings. So I mean, I've had them rehung and put behind museum quality glass, or rather my husband did as a gift to me. Mm-hmm. Just because they were starting to mold on the back. I kind of want to learn more about them because they're gorgeous, and I could see them being something that was hung in a temple. But I don't know where to go from where.
Yeah. Well, you know, around here, we see a lot more European things than Asian. And so I have to tell you, I'm not an Asian expert. However, through my professional organization, I'm connected with two Asian art specialists. One's a professor of Asian arts in Florida, and one is has been the curator of the Asian arts section of the Royal Ontario Museum up in Toronto. So those are the people I go to when I need to have some help with Asian items. And of course, when we have them look at and do some appraisal or research work, I can get the, you know, work, and we pay them for their time and their expertise. So if you would want to do that, you can go to my website, get in touch with me, and we could talk about connecting you with one of those specialists.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's go to Steve in Rome next. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I have a collection of Homer Laughlin plates, a full set of dishes, cups, saucers, gravy boat, and whatnot, from 1935, and I'm just, before I give these to Goodwill, because I have no interest in them, I wonder if there was any value attached.
Well, Homer Laughlin was one of the major American makers of dinnerware, and I've been to their factory, and they've done amazing amounts of production. And they are the company that made Fiestaware.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Same company. Now, what you have is it's not Fiesta, right?
No, it says Homer Laughlin. Right. Again, they were manufactured in 1935, from what I can tell of the markings on the back. And I also inherited this from my grandmother, who probably bought them back then.
Yes, I have my grandmother's Homer Laughlin set as well. And I have it because I like it, not because it's valuable. Again, the young people aren't decorating that way. If you look on eBay, for example, you will find hardly any good sales of sets of dinnerware. If people sell them, they separate them out, and they'll say, here's the plates. And somebody say, well, I broke my plates. That's my pattern. I'll buy just the plates. So you could piece it out that way. But in terms of when I do estate sales for people or auctions, they just are not bringing much money. The best I think I've ever gotten for what I believe you're describing for a set of 12 was $250, and that was sold to a bed and breakfast that wanted a different set of antique china for 7 days. If somebody stayed a whole week, they wanted to use a different set every day.
Well, good for them, huh?
Yeah, good for them, for sure.
So, you know, if you do decide to donate it, you can take a deduction and look around at the place, a tax deduction for that. And that would be a low enough value that you could look around and see what they sell dishes for and take that as a tax deduction, if that helps.
Well, that does help. Sure. I did that with my vinyl record collection last year.
Oh, now that one you might have hung on to. Yeah. Vinyl has come back.
It's coming back.
I understand that, but you know what? I'm not coming back.
Got it. I got you, Steve. Thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. I understand that completely. Oh, man. Katie and Bester, your turn. Hi, Katie. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm actually in Vesper, V-E-S-P-R.
Oh, Vesper.
Yep. Near Wisconsin Rapids. Good morning. And I have a set, probably like 100 tin stamps that they use to make food labels, like bread and soup and all different kinds of labels for food.
Oh, okay.
And I haven't been able to find, like, any information on them. It seems like maybe companies melted them down right away or something. So I was just curious if your guests could tell me what they might be worth. My kids actually found them. I have 4 kids, and they are theirs. So they're their little rainy day fund, they think.
That's great.
And they use them, they like put paper over them and color them, you know, with like a crayon.
Sure.
Sure.
Sure, that's great. So, yes, they may very well have been melted down. And I'm thinking that everything metal seemed to be melted down during the war years.
Yeah, and so, that's why I think they might be valuable.
Well, they may have some value. You know, advertising is quite a collectible these days. And I'm not off the top of my head. I have not sold any of these. But where I would look is on one of the databases, and it depends on how really interested you are, worthpoint.com might be one. Now, you can go in there. That's a subscription database, but you could go in there and get a day pass for, you know, maybe $10 or something like that, or even less. I don't know. But look around on those kind of things and see if you can find out if they have something like that, and then decide if you want to pay for it to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
They usually give you an idea of what they have, but WorthPoint would be one because they do follow a number of sales online and put them together, and they also include some eBay sales. And that seems to be a kind of thing that I would see might sell on eBay.
All right.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Kurt posted on Facebook that he'd like to know where he can find out if the items he has are valuable and worth handing down.
Well, I work with a lot of people who have this question. They come to me or call me and say, you know, my grandfather passed away and I got this stuff and I don't know if I should just trash it, give it away, or what. Maybe it's valuable. What I do, and you probably have people in your area, I don't know where you're from, that you could find through antique shops that will come in and give you a verbal consultation. You know, you pay somebody to come in, usually on an hourly basis, and, you know, if you have things that you don't think it'll take an hour, you know, they might prorate it, or and just tell you what they think you have. And I do that here in this area with a lot of families. We don't write up a formal written report. The individual usually follows me and writes a number on a sticky note and puts it on this and that. If I say, mm-hmm. oh, that's worth maybe between $75 and $100, they'll put that on there and get an idea of what they have and if it has any value.
Very cool. Dan in Madison up next. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, good morning, Larry, Shirley. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a what I believe to be a very old document that could have some historical value. I was just wondering if there's anyone in the Madison area who I could take that to and have them authenticate it and maybe appraise it for me.
What is the document related to?
It's a government document.
Okay, you might start with the State Historical Society.
Oh, okay.
They may have the ability to compare it to other documents, not knowing exactly who you're looking for, or they may be able to help you with that. Now, your appraiser, like me, doesn't do authentication, generally speaking. And the people who do authentication don't always do valuations, like museums.
Yeah,
but I'd start with the Historical Society, and especially since it's a government.
Oh, okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. John in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. Great show. I've got a question. I was given an old baseball, from the 1970s with some very, very famous signatures on it. And as the years go by, the ink is kind of the names are fading. How do I protect that?
That's a good question. First and foremost, keep it out of sunlight.
Okay.
That will fade anything faster than anything I can think of. So no direct sunlight. If you can put it under a protective dome that also reflects UV light, that helps. And you can usually get those at the sports memorabilia stores.
Okay.
And that would help it as well. Other than that, those are the two things I can think of. And I hope, you're enjoying it. If for any reason you're not, keep it in a dark place if you don't have it on display.
Is that something now, as the names are getting faded, would that also be something that I would want to take and get, validated? I mean, it's the Milwaukee Brewers, and, when Hank Aaron played with them and his signature's on there. So would I be able to go and maybe get that all authenticated and keep that with it so that as the, names fade, that sort of thing, I won't,
Yes, you can get that authenticated. There are basically two organizations that authenticate sports nationwide that are considered the standard. And I can't remember one. One is PSA, Professional Sports Authentication. And that is a very good idea, especially since you've got some of those famous names. You can look them up online. It tells you everything about how to do it, how to go about getting it done, and what it's going to cost you to do that. Any famous sports memorabilia that's sold is almost always going to have that authentication with it. So if there's any, consideration of selling it, who knows, in the generation to come or something, that would be helpful.
There we go.
This ball was handed to me, so it won't ever be sold.
Fabulous.
There you go. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. And you can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. If you got a photo, you can post it up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our page. And I'll take a look and see if we have some up. In the meantime, let's go to Danny in Hudson. Hi, Danny.
Hello. Thank you for an interesting show and for your time.
You bet. What can we do for you?
I inherited my grandmother's Edison phonograph and around 300 phonograph record cylinders, most of them in their cases.
Uh-huh.
I'm wondering what to do with them.
Oh, boy. That is a tough one. I know exactly what you're looking at, and the cylinders are interesting. They probably got the printing on from the company that made them, like Columbia and RCA. But 300 is a lot of them. And when they're sold, they usually go, if they're in good condition, not moldy and, or any of that kind of thing, they usually go about $5 a piece. And, of course, you have to have the Edison player to play them. But they're just interesting to look at as well. I don't have an upcycling idea for you, but maybe a listener does.
Trying to think of what you...
Yeah, a mobile of some sort.
But they're not real valuable.
No, no, they're about, you know, like I said, in good condition, about $5
a piece.
Each, yeah. But when you have 300 of them, that can add up.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Jim in Burlington. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I have an unusual item. My wife and I, when we were married in 1979, our family had a friend who was a priest, and on our wedding day, he gave us a papal blessing from Pope John Paul I. And I've always been curious whether something like that had any value.
Hmm.
Boy, that's a... You know, Larry, whenever I'm on your show, somebody stumps me.
Oh, boy.
One I haven't heard before. Does it have the signature, the Pope's signature?
It does. It's in Latin. It actually doesn't have the Pope's signature. Someone read the Latin to me at one point, and it basically says, you know, the Pope, you know, provides this blessing, blah, blah, blah. But it's actually not his actual signature.
Mm-hmm. My guess...
Although it has his picture on it.
Yeah. My guess is that they aren't terribly rare and that it's worth much more to you as a keepsake of your marriage than as a collectible item.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
I guess the only thing that led me to believe that it might be valuable is John Paul I was not Pope for very long.
No.
Right. And it's possible. I just don't have that answer for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. That's right. He was very short.
Yeah.
Very short. Shirley Bauman, our guest today, registered Wisconsin auctioneer, owner of Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. I'm Larry Mueller. Here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at heirlooms and antiques with Shirley Bauman of Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. We have links to her pages on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And speaking of Facebook, Natalie sent us a photo of a chest, a really nice-looking chest of drawers. Bought it at a garage sale. It was painted green, but she's obviously taken the paint off and exposed some nice, looks like maybe oak? I don't know. Hard.
In her message, she says cross-cut oak.
Oh, she does say that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thought it might have been from Canada. It's really quite pretty. What's the value on that one, Shirley?
Well, it is very nice, and congratulations on getting that paint off. That doesn't always happen. Looking at it, it could be cross-cut oak. It could also be ash, which looks a lot like oak but has a tighter grain. So I can't really tell from the picture. But these are the kinds of chests that were probably made about 100 years ago. Early 1900s, right around the turn of the century, maybe. If we open a drawer and we see the dovetails on the construction, that also helps. If they're real narrow pins in those dovetails, that would date it to maybe a little bit earlier, maybe 1870s or 80s. If they're a little wider, That would tell us it would be more like around 1900 or so. And we do see chests like this. It's fairly square, rectilinear, as we say, with a small amount of carving that was applied to the corners there in the front. Looks like it might have its original brasses, and you can check if there are any holes behind it that would tell you if they were changed. These pieces of furniture right now I see going on the market for maybe, $200, give or take, the Madison market here. Whether it's Canadian or not, I can't, tell you that right now from the photo. But it's a very nice piece. It looks like you've done a good job, and it's useful.
Yeah. Robin in Milwaukee has something for us. Hi, Robin.
Hi. I have two items that I have a question about. I have a Native American large grindstone. You know, it's like a mortar and pestle, but it's big. It's very big.
Yeah.
So I have a question about that. And then I have an Asian chair. It's got slats that go from the arms of the chair down and crisscross underneath the seat and then go down to, the bottom. And there's a lot of carving. There's carving on the back of it. And then where your hands would rest on the arms are lion heads that are carved. And so I'm wondering how to go about looking into these two things.
Okay. On the grinding stone, the mortar and pestle, if you know where it's from, that helps. What tribe it might have come from, and that helps looking, if it's Navajo, you could start looking for Navajo and what it is. If it's stone, I think you said stone.
It is stone, yes.
Okay, Navajo, stone, grinding stone or mortar and pestle or whatever tribe, Hopi or whoever it is. Try and look that up.
I don't know that. Is there a way to tell that?
Where did you acquire it? Was it here in Wisconsin?
I acquired it from someone else who had it, and if I remember right, they did say they had gotten it from out west, but okay. I don't have any details on it.
Sort of expands the number of potential tribes.
Right. Yeah.
I guess I'd start looking then with Native American mortar, pestle, grinding stones, and look that way. I don't have an answer right off the top here in terms of value, but that's where I'd start looking.
Okay.
And I think you'll find something because there's a lot of auctions and sales that have Native American items.
Okay.
And the chair, I believe I know what you're talking about, that I've seen them before. And you did a good job of describing it. They're very interesting. They're not very comfortable. They're more of an accent piece. And
looks like a throne.
Exactly. And they're special that way. They are around. When I see them up for sale, they're usually in the $100 to $150 range.
Okay. All right. Is it best to just try to sell it locally? I was told by someone that I should go down to Chicago and look into selling it down there. And
well, sometimes I recommend that to people. Where are you? Oh, you're in Milwaukee. No, I don't think Chicago is going to be any better than Milwaukee for you in this piece.
Okay.
Because it's not real rare.
Okay.
All right.
One more quick question.
Okay.
I acquired a big, huge box of beaded necklaces from my mother, and she was an antique collector, and I know a number of them are older. Where can I go to get these checked out? There's everything, all kinds of things, from amber to, I know, some necklaces that were from the 20s to... there's even a Native American, couple Native American necklaces. Some of them are signed.
Yeah.
Well, I know there are some appraisers in the Milwaukee area. You can go on the International Society of Appraisers website or any of the other major appraisal associations and find some appraisers. Also, if you have an antique shop that you know and trust, and they might have a dealer who specializes in vintage jewelry, and they can take a look for you and kind of separate the better things from the lesser things. It all depends on what the material is it's made of. As you said, amber, you might have some precious or semi-precious stones there as compared to just glass. But the glass might even be valuable because of the vintage and the style and who designed it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. We're turning to Lori in Twin Lakes next. Lori, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What have you got for us today?
Good. This is a great show. This is just what I've been looking for. I have some sports memorabilia, and my dad had it, mm-hmm. and he kind of wants me to check it out and see where I can have it appraised or see what it's worth or who might be interested in it. And it looks like I have numerous pieces here. One's an official program, 1924, of the Chicago Bears Football Club Incorporated. I've got the whole program. I've got an original photo of the original team, the original coaches and treasurers and president, vice president of the team. I've got numerous original letters from Mr. McMillan to George Halas. One's dated 1935. And that was the Chicago Bears Football Club. It looks like it's the original paperwork, mm-hmm. original letter in handwriting, not typed. And I've got the National Football League Uniform Players Contract original, basically jump-starting the Chicago Bears in the NFL. So I've got quite a few pieces here.
Yeah.
Sounds like a nice collection.
It is. And a Chicago Bears news release from 1980. This is quite a few pages. I haven't read through all of it.
Okay.
I'm just not sure. And I've got photos and newspaper clippings. And
great. If that came up to me, or if it were mine, what I would do with it is contact Heritage Auctions down in Dallas, Dallas, Texas. Okay. They do sports memorabilia, and their specialist there, his name is Mike Gutierrez. You can look on their website, Heritage Auction, and find their website. And talk to them about getting you a pre-auction estimate.
Okay.
And that would help you decide. They regularly do. That's one of the things they are known for is big sports auctions. They do only Americana. Well, I don't know if it's only, but they really specialize, and I believe only do Americana. And this would really fit there. And he's a good sports specialist.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, I think this would be something that would be wonderful to be in a sports museum or somewhere where it could really be appreciated as opposed to just being passed around.
Well, there's the other thing. If you want it to be kept by somebody, it's possible for it for you to contact the Bears organization and see, you know, all of the teams have some kind of Hall of Fame or museum. And if you would like to donate it, then you would want to get a value if they are interested in it. And
it wouldn't hurt to contact the Bears office.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I had wondered, too, if the NFL might be interested because this is really pertinent to that organization and the very beginning of it because most of these dates on here are from the 30s into the 40s.
Yeah.
Sure. So start with the Bears and mention that to them because they would probably be able to get you to the right people in the NFL as well.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, but the one in Texas, I'll check that one out too, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot for calling. Frank in Hartford, what have you got for us today? Hi.
Hi. I got my dad's old schnitzel bunk. I was in an old shed for a number of years. Dad would be 112 years old if he was living today. I'm 82. I fixed the leg was broke. I fixed it. Do you know what a schnitzel bunk is?
I was just going to ask you to describe that for the listeners.
it's a schnitzel bunk. In English, it means a whittle bench, and it's got four legs. You sit on it, and you pinch something in like a old wooden vise, and you put your foot on it, and then you can carve something or make shingles, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I fixed the leg on it, but it's well over 100 years old. I was wondering if it's worth anything.
Oh, boy, again, that's a hard question. I think it's a wonderful piece, and I love the way you've described it. As far as value, I don't think it's particularly valuable on the antiques market, except as we're talking about maybe using something surprising in a different way. I think it kind of follows along with the primitives that are kind of falling out of favor. When we have sales, we have a hard time selling spinning wheels and that kind of thing. And I think it falls along there, where at one time people were decorating more with primitives. They are not doing that right now. So I would say that, you know, you probably have something that's about maybe $50 or $65 if we were doing a sale for you right now.
Maybe that's one to pass on to the grandkids or the great-grandkids.
That's what I would do. And you know what? I would put a note with it.
Yes.
Explain it. Tell them how it was used and who used it and when.
Oh, that's a very, very good idea. Frank, thank you so much for calling. We need to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. But then we will be back with Shirley Bauman. She'll be with us right up until 12:30. You stay with us. News next. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, taking a look at antiques and heirlooms and talking a little bit about how to get the younger generation interested in antiques and heirlooms. Our guest, Shirley Bauman. Shirley is a certified personal property appraiser, a registered auctioneer, owner of Bauman Auction Services, and she also owns Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. And we have links to her, I'm sure. Jill's got some links up on our Facebook page to her businesses. So great to have her here. And lots of people online. We got lots of Facebook questions. Kind of a very interesting photo, Shirley, from Suzanne, a 4 by 4.5 ivory frame. Is that 4.5 inches?
4.5 inches, yeah.
Ivory frame with a hand-painted portrait. This is really beautiful. Latin printed on paper on the back. It was her grandmother's. Don't know its value, wondering about it, but the one of the things that, you know, really kind of perks your ears up a little bit when this ivory frame, which is quite beautiful, but does it have value?
Well, there are some things changing in the world of being able to sell ivory, and that, of course, affects its value. There are new laws on the sale of ivory are expected to be enacted probably June, July. And, of course, with the government, it might not quite make those deadlines, but coming up real soon here. And that's going to make it much harder to sell ivory. And that affects even the family heirlooms that you keep, because if there is no market for it, we really can't put a value on it. The way that generally the law is stated is that if you have documentation, you know, documentation that satisfies the federal government of its age, and I can't tell you exactly the number off the top of my head. I have to look that up, what year it is. But it's if it's old antique ivory and you have documentation, it will be able to be sold. Without documentation, it won't be able to be sold and therefore doesn't have value, even though if you keep it in your family, you know, it doesn't mean it's worthless. But that's basically, if that would come up in an appraisal for me, that's what I'd have to say, because there is, if this is enacted, no value. Now, this frame is small. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really gorgeous.
And inside of it is what we call a portrait miniature. And it was very, very popular to do people of means, because they didn't have photography. back then. So this is, I mean, I can look at this, and with the cracks in the ivory and knowing the date of, you know, when they did this kind of portraiture, I believe it's a beautiful antique piece done in Europe somewhere. I probably continental Europe, but I can't be more specific than that. But I see these, and sometimes the painting is actually done on ivory rather than paper as well. And they can be quite valuable if you know who the sitter is, the person in the picture there. That always helps. But I've had them, you know, in insurance appraisals that I've put, you know, numbers between, depending on condition and such, $800 to $2,000, again, depending on if we know the sitter and history.
It's really pretty, for it sure. Is. Sarah in Madison has a question for you, Shirley. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got some things, too, that I don't know if they're worth anything anymore, but I've got maybe about 200 or more Hummel figurines, and some of these are very, very, very old, you know, the original ones. And they're so much more pretty than the ones that they make today are not even pretty, in my opinion. But what would you do with those, Shirley, and are they worth anything? And then I also have a huge, like a luggage-sized box of old photographs, maybe from 1900s or something, and they've been sitting in my closet forever, and should I just keep them in my closet, or what can I do with them?
Okay. Sad to say, the market for Hummels has really bottomed out, and I think the internet is to blame for that, because they became so readily available, and then the Japanese decided to reproduce them, so the market is very low. The early ones that you have will definitely hold more value than the new ones. The ones that are maybe 3-5 inches tall, the old ones definitely have some value. Some of them, I mean, I have already bought at a garage sale 3 Hummel figurines for $10. When I have sales, there are still collectors of them because they're cute, they're well done, they're marked. I often am able to sell them for about $35 a piece, and I know that's not anywhere near what was paid for them originally. But that's what's happened to the market. Now, the larger ones are holding their values a little bit more. So if you have any of them that are maybe 8 or 10 inches tall or taller, they will hold value more. And you can find values. There's books of them, but I would really recommend going out to some of the sales sites on the internet to see exactly what they're going for today. If you see completed sales on eBay, that will give you an idea. But don't go to asking prices. Go to the completed sales.
Okay.
And photographs, it's interesting. It depends on the subject as far as if there's value. If you have pictures of soldiers in uniform, that is something. Any, like, Native Americans, some old funeral pictures where at that time they used to take photographs of the deceased, that holds a little value. Some of them are just, you know, people in interesting costume, and sometimes fashion designers, clothing designers will buy them just to see the styles. But for the most part, that's where I am. And sometimes interesting children's photos, more for the aesthetics. Also, in that period, if you have like old sports teams, maybe a basketball team in their uniforms from the old, 1920s or something, there are people who collect those.
So a few things there to think about. Sarah, thank you so much for calling. Jim in Colorado emailed wondering how he can avoid making mistakes in getting appraisals and selling some antiques that he has.
Well, what I would recommend is getting a certified or accredited appraiser from one of the major appraisal associations, the ASA, Appraisal Society of America. the AAA, Appraisers Association of America, International Society of Appraisers. They have to follow ethics rules. We have to get continuing education. If there's problems, you have an organization that you can go back to say this doesn't meet, you know, my satisfaction. Is there anything we can do about that? That's what I would recommend. And on the websites of those organizations, they all seem to have find a member or find an appraiser, and then you can search for your area and your expertise. If you're looking in fine art, for example, and you're looking at sculpture, you can probably find somebody who specializes just in that topic in your area.
Very good. Thanks for that question, Jim. Stephanie in Independence up next. Hi, Stephanie.
I got some old wash boards from my grandmother that are wooden and glass, and they got married in the 30s. Do they have any value?
Well, again, this goes back to people aren't really decorating with the primitives right now. They're interesting. Some people, you know, like to decorate their laundry room with that, or even the garden wall or the fence wall outside. They really don't have a lot of value. The printing on them, if it has a advertising real clearly printed on it, that helps a little bit. But often they're $15 to $25, depending on condition and size.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thanks. That'd be something that could work outside, though, in a garden area,
yeah.
I would think. You better consider that. Think about that a little bit. Susan in New Berlin, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I was just calling about the Schnitzelbank right before the break. The gentleman, I can't remember where he said he was from, but he might want to get hold of the State Historical Society. And I'm thinking especially like Old World Wisconsin, especially if he got it back to a usable state.
Mm-hmm.
I bet they'd want to use it there, at least in the German area, if not in, I'm sure Schnitzelbanks are used by some other name in a lot of other areas, and because they'd actually use it then.
Yeah, Old World Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they take donations like that because they're looking for the originals.
Right, and they put on displays for people
right.
to come and see how these items were used.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great idea.
Great idea. Thank you, Susan. Appreciate it. Good idea. Beth in Wausau has something for us. Hi, Beth.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What have you got for us?
Okay, I have two lamps. And my mom got them when she got married, which would have been like 1946. They're Walter von Nessen lamps, and they're very odd looking. I think they're called machine age industrial lamps, but they almost look like little robots. But I've seen one of them in the Museum of Art in Minneapolis and in the Milwaukee Museum of Art. And I looked them up online, and somebody had them posted as maybe replica lamps, but they showed a value of $2,999 mm-hmm. each. Now, the ones that I have, there used to be a Bakelite insert that went around the light bulb that we no longer have, and they're not in great shape. Is there someplace I could take them to get them assessed or appraised?
Sure. What I would suggest, you're in the middle of the state, look on the website of Wisconsin Auctioneers Association and find an auctioneer in your area who has credentials for appraising.
Okay.
It's called GPPA, usually, Graduate Personal Property Appraiser.
Okay.
And I think they'll be able to help you with that. Of course, you could always, you know, bring them down here, but I think you'll be able to find someone. I think that Bakelite insert missing is going to make a big, big difference.
I think so, too, probably.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, it's worth checking into at least. So.
Yeah.
That's why I do it locally first. And if they seem to say, oh, this is really something, then you could, you know, continue on from there.
Yeah.
Okay. Here, can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Is there any place where I could find the Bakelite inserts? Are there websites that have parts and pieces for those sorts of things?
There are reproduction websites, and I can't remember names of them, but look for reproduction of antique
okay.
items. I know there's one, I want to say, in Pennsylvania that's very big, but I can't remember the name of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Beth. Yeah, that might make a difference, or could make a big difference.
Right.
On the other hand, it could cost quite a bit, too.
That's right. You got to always balance that.
Weigh that out. Marcus in Green Bay. Hi, Marcus.
Yeah, I'm having fond memories of my mom bringing me antiquing when I was a little boy, you know, over 50 years ago. But anyway, so a lot of things she collected. Depression glass. Now, has that lost its value over the years? And remind me how that got started, like movie theaters or and then the other thing is miniature kerosene lamps, huge collection. Like, how are those things doing nowadays?
Okay.
Okay. Depression glass has lost some of its value right now. It was something that was often given away, a little item at when you went to the movie theater. They might give you a cup and saucer or a little plate. And it was developed in the Depression era, and not all of it that we call Depression glass today was actually made in that period. But it's the glass where that's maybe light pink, green, there's some blues, even clear glass in it. They all have patterns, and the patterns have names, and it's fun to collect them. I know some people that want to collect, let's say, a cup and saucer or plate of every pattern, and somebody wants to collect a set of just one pattern and color. So it is fun. There's a lot out there, but it has lost some of its value. Where we used to see maybe a nice serving bowl going for, let's say, $35 or $40 is now in the $20 range.
Okay.
So it's gone down, but it's not totally gone.
What about those miniature lamps?
Miniature lamps, they vary a lot in terms of what they're made of, the design, that kind of thing. But again, it's something that's more on that primitive line, so they're not real popular right now. But you can have miniature lamps, you know, it can be an affordable collectible for somebody. You can have them running from $10 to, lately I don't see any of them in my experience going for more than like $75 at the tops.
Dennis in Coloma. Hi, thanks for calling, Dennis.
Hi. I had an elderly neighbor who gave me hubcaps from his 1949 Buick and wasn't sure what to do with them, but I drilled a hole in the center, put a clock mechanism in them. I gave one back to him, and he thought that was just the greatest thing in the world.
Oh.
So that's something you can do with old hubcaps.
Sounds great.
Another great idea. Thank you, Dennis.
If you end up with a lot of them, it sounds like something you might be able to sell at a car show or art fair.
Oh, sure. Why not?
Yeah,
great idea. Thanks, Dennis. We've got Wallace and Weyerhaeuser. Wallace, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Thanks, Larry. When I hear all this stuff, I think about all the stuff that we inadvertently discarded sometimes. Anyway, I'll just make it short. I do have a De Laval cream separator, the old cream separators that you had to crank by hand when all you could sell was the butter, was the cream.
Yeah.
Is there any worth value to that machine?
Well, there's a lot of them that still remained with farms. So they're not real valuable. For a while, people were collecting them more, but I see them maybe in the $85 range these days. Talking about repurposing some things, I've seen them used often, say on a covered porch or anywhere in a yard with a flower pot and flowers in the top of it. In the big opening. So people are using them that way as kind of outdoor decorations, too.
Yeah, that's a nice idea as well. So there you go, Wallace. Thanks for calling. We have Todd in Madison next. Hi, Todd.
Hello. I was recently at the auction when Little Norway closed the doors.
Yeah.
And I got a lot of pieces there, but the one that I was really proud of was the sign that was out on the road. There was a little elf that was on top of it pointing the way down there.
Yep.
And I got that. I got the little elf off the sign. And I was wondering if there was any value in that or any collectible. I don't really want to get rid of it, but
Well, you know, I bet there is some value to it. When you mentioned that, my mind went to the television show The American Pickers.
Yeah.
And, you know, they love little sign things like that. And so that has become very popular. And I think a lot of it is due to them and that show. So I would think it certainly does have value. People, again, one of those surprise things, if you'd have a little elf in your, you know, kitchen pointing the way to the table or whatever. I think that would be interesting.
Sure.
And exactly what value, I don't know, but I see a lot of signs going for some pretty good money.
We have, thanks for calling. Tony sent us a photo on Facebook of a jade statue. Got it years ago in Thailand. Current value of something like that. It's pretty, but it's hard to tell the quality of the jade, perhaps? Or?
It is. It's very hard to tell the quality of the jade. It looks to be, you know, the white jade is really prized more than the green, even though the green is what we think of as being more valuable. It's very nice. There's a quarter in the corner so we can get an idea of the size. The carving looks good. Again, with a photograph like that, we can't quite see the quality of it, and we don't know the back or if there's any inclusions in it. It looks like it might be, I would say 6-8 inches maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about it. There's a quarter in the picture in the lower left, so probably 6-8 inches.
And a lot of these things I see going in approximately $500-$700 range if they're real quality jade and, you know, few inclusions, and we don't know in the back. There could be, you know, this is why appraisers likes to see things. There could be a big crack in the back or something of that nature. Or a big dark yellow line running through it or something. So,
Carol Lee in Madison. Hi.
Hi, Larry. I'm on the board of the Friends of the State Historical Society. And if folks have nothing else to do with those wonderful things that they've been talking about, we have an auction every 2 years of those wonderful things. They can get a tax write-off, and the money all goes to the State Historical Society. Just contact the Madison office, and we'll get you to the right people.
What a wonderful idea. Thank you so much,
Carol.
You're
welcome.
I really appreciate it.
And where does that auction take place?
We have it at Old World Wisconsin. We just had our auction, but we gear up again, and it takes 2 years of wonderful volunteers. But we will even give an estimate of a donation value. And if it is a large enough piece, we may even move it for you to our storage. I do not run the auction, but Friends of the Historical Society do. And if you call the state office, they will get you to the right numbers.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have fun.
Yeah, I appreciate your call very much. What a wonderful idea. And here we are with lots of questions, and we're out of time
already.
Yeah, it really flew by. We got some great ones up on some emails and some Facebook questions as well, Shirley. But have to do it another time, I guess.
I guess I'd love to come again.
She will be back, Shirley Bauman, appraiser, owner of Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. Wonderful to have her with us. And we will get her back, and we'll talk with her again. Go online to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show for links to her businesses. Garden Talk tomorrow. Our guest from the Janesville Rotary Garden is going to talk about what's new and answer your gardening questions. Thanks for listening. Please stay with us.